On the line from the Irish Times, we have John O'Sullivan to talk about the weekend's rugby action. John, how are you?
Dara, I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent stuff. So we'll start off with Leinster. A very encouraging 25-11 win over Bats in the Champions Cup this weekend. A very youthful side as well that Leo Cullen put his faith in.
Yeah, very much so. It was positive all round. I think there was a sense of excitement amongst the Leinster supporters after the match. They got a view into the future in some respects with the young players coming through and acquitting themselves so well. I think it would have been a pleasant, I don't want to use the word surprise, even though there would be an element of that for the coaching team. But I think it was a vindication of the faith that they had in the young players. And as the young players responded with very mature performances in some respects, it's not a massive surprise. The younger players on the pitch have come through the academy. They've been successful from their time at school through underage rugby with the national side. They understand the demands of this level. Obviously, it's a step up playing Champions Cup, but they also, over the last couple of seasons, if you look at the likes of, I'm thinking of Josh van der Fleer and James Tracy, Ross Maloney in particular, they've come through in the British and Irish by playing British and Irish Cup matches for Leinster A. They've been successful. Leinster have won two British and Irish Cups and were beaten finalists, I think, last year. So in the last 3 years, they have that experience. And, you know, people might look at the standard of the British and Irish Cup, but what it does, particularly for forwards, is it gives them an opportunity to play against big, strong, heavy, kind of awkward scrummagers in the case of, say, Peter Dooley, who's another one, sorry, that came through that as well. And Ty Furlong, it gives them an opportunity to play against players of that ilk and, you know, come up against kind of experienced old heads. And they've benefited from that. And they've benefited from playing together. And they've benefited from a style of play that Leinster A produced under Gervin Dempsey when he was in charge of the academy. So it was a hugely positive game for Leinster all round. I think it also energises the older, we call them older rather than old players in the Leinster squad, and they feed off that as well, and they understand, you know, with the enthusiasm coming in from those players, it also drives them on because it puts pressure on them to perform and kind of to keep up with the younger players, if you like.
Exactly. You did mention a few names there of the young kids, especially the likes of Ross Maloney and James Tracy. I thought now myself, James Tracy had a really, really good game playing as hooker. You could definitely see there's a lot of potential there with him.
Yeah, very much so. It just shows you as well, he's a poster boy for those that like a kind of change late in life in terms of position on a rugby pitch. He was at school in Newbridge and he played prop up until, I think he was about 19 or so. And they persuaded, when he came into the academy, they persuaded him to switch to hooker. And it's a measure of his mental strength and his ability, basically, that he's converted very successfully. If you look at the primary duties, and that's what everybody looks at first and foremost, you know, his line-out throwing was excellent in the first half, and that's something he's had to master in a very short-ish, I suppose, relative to how long he's been playing the sport time frame, and yeah, he's done that extremely well. He's very mobile, he's very quick, he's a strong carrier around the pitch. He's been very good in all aspects of the game, and I think anybody would have been proud of his hands that put Issa Asewa away for that run down the touchline. So he was a huge contributor around the pitch, and also he's a strong scrummager as well, as befits somebody who comes from a kind of loose head prop in his school days and underage days. So a lot of positives in terms of his performance, and also very dedicated. I was talking to John Fogarty, the scrum coach, and he was saying that Tracy is one of the last to leave, that he practices really hard in terms of his line out throwing, and his dedication and work ethic are as good as anybody's in the squad.
Yeah, he seems to be a sort of in the same mould as a Sean Cronin. It must be the way that they're producing hookers at Leinster, because Sean would be sort of the same. He'd be sort of, you know, they call him the Nugget for a reason. He's good hands, quick as well, very, very quick actually for a hooker. Could it be a sort of changing of how we are going to start seeing hookers, or maybe are these two just maybe too flashing the pans, and we'll stick with the more traditional sort of big front three?
I think it's more a case of the way Leinster want to play. If you look at, if you go further down the depth roster in terms of the hooking position of Leinster, you would see Brian Byrne, who is kind of very similar to both James Tracy and Sean Cronin. Very good, very mobile, quick, very good hands, good ball player, gets around the pitch and is very comfortable on the ball in terms of passing and making decisions. And also then beneath that, you've got Sean McNulty, who plays at UCD at the moment, is another very mobile hooker. So I think to fit into the style of play that Leinster wants, they're looking at their hookers being those type of players that kind of fit comfortably in. And I think that applies right across the board. It's not just at hooker. If you look at Peter Dooley played until he was about 17, I think. He was played at number 8, and then he converted to loose head prop. So he's very comfortable on the ball. He carries very well. His passing is very good. Tadhg Furlong and Peter Dooley both have GAA backgrounds, so that's a positive. I think that kind of, if you like, cross-pollination between sports is very good. It's a huge positive, and it's a huge positive in relation to Irish sport, having that opportunity to play a number of sports, and you can see the benefit of it rather than just playing one sport. So I think the props, if you look at Jack McGrath, Cian Healy, Peter Dooley, Tadhg Furlong, Marty Moore, they can all play, they can all move, they can all pass, and I think that's the style of play that Leinster are looking for. And I think Leo Cullen, Gervin Dempsey, Kurt McQuilkin, you know, John Fogarty, and everybody involved at Leinster, you know, they deserve credit for the way in which they have built slowly. There was a certain impatience at the start of the season, and, you know, there were issues with the player management program because the slide that they have to take into consideration every week, what players need to be rested, what players need to play, what national squad members need game time, all that sort of stuff. So it's not just a simple case of picking a form team each week. There are certain other considerations that are important. And I think the coaching team and management of Leinster deserve credit for the manner in which they've built a squad at the moment, who are capable of playing a certain style. I think you saw a little bit of a return to the way that Leinster used to play, and I think that's a positive. Now, you can't read too much into the Bath game, but it is a very positive step, and it was a very positive step with a team that was, we won't say backbone, but a team that consisted of, you know, six very talented young players.
Yeah, and they'll want to continue the steps forward this coming weekend when they travel to play Wasps. Is there any indication yet, I know it's still early in the week, that whether or not Leo's going to stick with this sort of same youthful side, or he might go for a bit more experience in this game?
I think there's there'll be a number of, if you like, Irish squad players who may need some game time. So I think that will probably be reflected in the team that's selected. There's also a British and Irish Cup match in Donnybrook on Friday night. So whether they decide, it's not a question of, that's obviously not a priority, but you might see that they might try one or two of the other young players who are in that group. Like if you look at, say, for example, a Cian Kelleher, there are one or two others. Noel Reid might come into it, the starting lineup, you know, into that equation, all that sort of stuff. So I think there will be changes to the squad. I'm not sure that those six players, I'll be pretty sure that those six players won't play again. And he might look at one or two others because it's a different assignment. It's one thing playing at the RDS, slightly different dynamic against the Wasps side, who are desperate to win to guarantee that they go into the knockout stages. So it'll be a different and more difficult, no doubt about it. It'll be a more difficult assignment on Saturday over at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry.
Moving on to Munster, who also got back a bit of pride as well from their disappointing campaign so far. A bonus point, 26-13 win over Stade Francais at Thomond Park. Something that definitely will sort of raise confidence a little bit, especially going forward from the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think it was important, and I think again, Munster squad management deserve credit for that. They produced a performance, and they managed to see it out. It's a positive step, and the key for them will be sustaining that over the coming weeks. But I think in terms of the group, I think it was a significant step forward. It was nice to see a number of individuals as well come back into, you know, good form basically, and a number of individuals put up their hands, to use the cliche, for the national squad. and it's important in that respect. I think winning generates its own momentum. Munster go off to Italy to play Benetton Treviso on Sunday, and Anthony Foley will be keen that the team continue in the same vein, that they produce a performance and they win on Sunday and can take that into the following week in the Pro 12 and into a time when they will lose some of their players during the Six Nations. So I think it's having that little bit of momentum will be important. And Munster have some pretty, as things go, reasonable fixtures during the Six Nations period. And I think if they can get a little bit of momentum going into that, I think they can do quite well and they can kind of clamber back up the table and put a bit of pressure on the top four sides.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about seeing Munster wear black, though, at Thomond Park.
Well, it was funny. I think they were due to wear black the previous week. It was a trade-off because they brought the wrong jerseys with them to Paris. So Stade Français they had to change into their change strip, if you like, in Stade Jean Bouin. So this week, as a quid pro quo, if you like, Munster had to change into their black jerseys rather than wearing red at home.
Oh, right. It's just something that I don't like. It's not natural. it should be red at Thomond Park always. But I guess if they want to just, you know, as a thank you, as a form of gratitude, I guess we can allow just this one. Yeah. Moving on to Ulster. Their hopes for a quarter final took a really bad shot in the arm. A 33-17 loss away to Saracens. I think many people expected Saracens to win, but I think Ulster maybe themselves were kind of hoping if they could get within 7 points to get at least one bonus point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think anybody would have Ulster favourites going over to Allianz Park, given Saracens' form this season. I know they were coming off their only loss of the season against Harlequins the previous week. They're the form team in Europe. They're playing, a really tough brand of rugby with a fair bit of finesse as well. They have been very successful. Mark McCall and his coaching staff there have done a good job. The players have responded. They've made themselves very tough to beat, and they've won both at home and on the road. So, you know, it was a pretty formidable task for Ulster at the weekend. What will have disappointed Les Kiss more than anything else is that Ulster put themselves in a position in the first half, having scored an early try and having survived concerted pressure for maybe 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. They had an opportunity. They elected to kick a penalty to touch. The line-out throw was underthrown. They turned over possession. A second line-out was turned over 90 seconds later, or maybe a little bit less. And then on the 32nd minute, I think Paddy Jackson missed a kick at goal. So those three things, there was a shift in momentum because Saracens went down the pitch. At that stage, it was 7-6 to Ulster. Saracens went down the pitch. They scored a try just before half-time to put them 13-7. And they had, in some respects, weathered the, kind of Ulster's best period in the match. Ulster will look and say, well, OK, if they had picked up 7 points at that point, it might have been a different game because they would have asked different questions and Saracens would have had to chase a little bit. And you know, you would have it would have dented their confidence a little bit, and it would have infused a kind of belief in Ulster at that point, you know, because you're getting the reward on the scoreboard. When you don't get the reward on the scoreboard, then you start to question sometimes what you're doing. Then little mistakes creep in. Ulster's set piece suffered a little bit. They gave up penalties. They lost Weehan Herbst, to a knee injury. And bit by bit, you could just see the mistakes started to accumulate. Saracens, really turned, kind of put on the squeeze in the second half physically as much as anything else. They didn't give the ball back to Ulster. Ulster found it very difficult to get possession and virtually no territory in the second half. Yeah. And Saracens just literally overpowered them and were full value for their 33-10 lead before Ian Humphreys at 33 probably didn't appreciate having to sprint 70 metres to score on the post, but he did really well. So 33-17 put a tiny bit of gloss on it from an Ulster perspective. Yeah. At a time when, you know, they were 33-10 behind. They'll reflect on that period in the first half when they had opportunities to kind of put a little bit of daylight between them and Saracens, and the scoreboard didn't do it and ultimately paid the price for it.
Yeah, seeing Humphreys there, you couldn't help but laugh towards the end where he slowed down and saw that the Saracens defender coming towards him.
I think they call it.
Yeah, the legs were starting to give out a little bit there. I think as well, now I only caught the second half of this game myself, but even it was so important that Ulster sort of, they said themselves, I think they that it was important that they get the first score of the second half, which they did, which was a penalty. But like you said, I think when Saracens put the squeeze on, they just couldn't capitalise after. I think almost instantly they gave a penalty away as well, which sort of restored the lead. And I think after that, you could see, especially confidence was starting to seep out of the Ulster side, I should say. And I think maybe, like you said, when they sort of gained control, Saracens, I think it was just, it was only going to be one winner after that.
Absolutely. Well, Saracens put pressure on them in every area. They were aggressive in their line speed, in defence. They were very strong at the breakdown. They stopped Ulster, and they didn't give the ball away, and they made Ulster go through sets and sets in defence, and it's very difficult in those circumstances to be absolutely error-free, and it's also very difficult to be, to not give away penalties. And unfortunately for Ulster, irrespective of where they were on the pitch, they were giving away penalties. Now, they were slightly fortunate that Owen Farrell only kicked 5 out of 9 off the tee on the day, but having said that, giving away those penalties allowed Farrell to kick Saracens down into the corner, and once they got their line-out ball going, they were very difficult to stop, and they were pretty patient and ruthless in guaranteeing that they got, they exacted maximum, benefit from those situations on the scoreboard, you know, scoring tries, getting the bonus point try, and then really with about 60 minutes gone, it was only a question, or 65 minutes gone, it really was a question of what the final score would be.
Yeah. On the plus side, though, for Ulster, it was announced yesterday that Rodney Ayew would be moving for the start of next season. So every cloud has a silver lining, you could say. Sort of a deal that seems to work for everybody. I think Connacht aren't too... I know they're going to be disappointed, but I think they're sort of okay with him leaving at this stage. And I'm sure Ulster will welcome with open arms.
I think it's a positive. If you look at it from the perspective of the player, and if you look at it in terms of the bigger picture, that being Ireland, I think, the more game time he gets and the more he develops, he's 27 years of age, the more he develops and the more exposure he gets to big games, the better the player he'll become. And that's very important from an Irish context, because he's won 3 caps for Ireland. Like, he's a big, big man. And if you can get him to be more involved around the pitch and kind of work on a little bit on the scrummaging, because he carries very powerfully and he can add value. So it'll be interesting to see for him how he develops next season up at Ulster, and whether they can get him to develop him in such a way that he's a strong contender for a place in the Irish team.
Yeah. Speaking of the Irish team, obviously the squad will be announced tomorrow for the Six Nations. Mm-hmm. We are expecting probably to see the likes of Gary Ringrose, CJ Stander, possibly Stuart McCluskey as well. Any other notable additions do you think that would be made to the squad?
I think that you'll see Josh van der Fleer. I think that you may see, even though he's injured at the moment, James Cronin. There'll be a few players named that will have injury issues or maybe currently injured, but will be back. I think they'll be named in the squad. I think it's always slightly disingenuous when you've got a squad that's 36, 37 players big. You know, if you talk about the players that you've just listed as being in the squad, the real question is how close are they to starting a game in the Six Nations? Mm-hmm. And while it's nice to see them included in the squad, and they have been there before, if you like, they've been brought down to Carlton House, you know, to understand what's involved, to understand what Joe Schmidt demands, to be more comfortable in that environment and all that sort of stuff. So they've kind of, it paves the way for a more kind of regular involvement, if you like, when they're selected and they're genuinely challenging for positions. So I think if you were looking ahead to the team that starts against Wales on Sunday, on the first Sunday in February, I think you would look at, you know, possibly Stuart McCluskey having a very strong case, depending on what way Joe Schmidt sees his, you know, three-quarter line and full back and basically the centre pairing.
Yeah.
You know, Jared Jared Payne's back and fit. He played at fullback for Ulster at the weekend, did very well. Obviously, his touches were excellent, apart from putting the grubber through for Luke Marshall's try. His general game was sharp, amazingly sharp for somebody who's been out since October. And it's a question of whether Joe Schmidt sees him. He wants him to play at centre or fullback, where Luke Fitzgerald plays, where he sees Robbie Henshaw, what sort of mix he sees in midfield. Mm-hmm. All that sort of stuff is obviously will be relevant to what team that Joe Schmidt will select for the opening game against Wales. So while I would expect all those players that you listed to be in the squad, I would say that they're not necessarily frontline contenders, we call it, for a place on the team against Wales as things stand, and depending on injuries, obviously, between now and then.
Yeah, can I get your view on the Ireland squad as a whole then? Do you think with the likes of Stander, Van der Vlaar, Ringrose, do you think now Irish rugby is in a good position to go forward? Do you think it's in a better position than it was in the so-called golden age? Or do you think that there's still deficiencies there that need to be resolved?
I think you're always looking. I think it's a very positive thing that there are so many good young players coming through. I think that there's some very good young players in Munster, there's some very good young players in Ulster who won't feature in this squad necessarily. What you're looking for from the provinces is just to expand the playing pool. I think if you're judging them against what was achieved, you know, Grand Slam, Triple Crowns, all that sort of stuff, obviously it's very early days. The potential is there, which is something that is hugely positive for supporters and management alike. You need, as has been seen over the last couple of seasons, you know, there are very narrow margins between winning the Six Nations and finishing third in the Six Nations. And Ireland and under Joe Schmidt have done extremely well to win back-to-back Six Nations. I think the way that the team develops and evolves over the style of rugby that they play will be interesting and interesting to watch. I think for some of those players, and it's difficult to predict at this stage how injuries will impact upon team selection over a tournament the last 7 weeks and five matches, but I think some of those players may have a bigger role to play in terms of the national side when it comes to the three-match tour of South Africa in the summer. I think that's an opportunity then to have a look at various things. I think, you know, the priority for the IRFU and I presume for the Ireland team management is to win the tournament that you're going into. And you do that like there's you don't get any marks for style or beauty content. You know, you look at if you win the tournament, then that's a plus. And as far as the RFU are concerned, that is something that they'll be very happy about. Ireland have won the last two Six Nations, and I think Joe Schmidt and his management team deserve credit for that. You can argue the toss over the style. You can argue the toss about why Ireland weren't as successful as they hoped to be in the World Cup and. Also, the game, you know, looking at New Zealand, Argentina, Australia, and the way that they're playing. And I think that Ireland, it would be nice to see Ireland just evolve and develop a little bit style-wise to put a kind of more of an emphasis on retaining possession and maybe a little less on a kicking game. But having said that, it's a bit like if you were to ask supporters, well, what do you want? Do you want to win a Six Nations or do you want to finish third in the Six Nations and develop a little bit in terms of the style of rugby?
Yeah, that brings up an interesting question, actually, because we had this conversation last Tuesday. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, well, there's not at all, really, a lot of game time, especially for international sides, where they can use to experiment. Now, I know probably in the autumn internationals, they have that one game probably against a Georgia or a maybe even against a Barbarians to test out squads, but every other game does mean a lot. Do you think maybe that there could be a case for maybe some more international games, maybe sometime even maybe in the I know there's summer tours, but maybe later on in the summer just for international teams to just try out new systems, like you were saying, instead of having to go into Six Nations and trying it and possibly, you know, not playing as well as people would expect you to or hope for the team than they would hope to.
I think it's difficult because of the player issue, player management issue. You can, like, players have a long enough season, you can't flog players, so you're trying to give them a proper break during the summer and then they have to go back and do a pre-season. So it all comes down to the calendar and the fixture schedule for the year and mm-hmm. when you can give them a break. So to extend their playing season or to start it early would be difficult unless you were to give them some sort of leeway and time off during the season as well. So you'd have to look at it as a And there have been, you know, there's a lot of people in favour of looking at a global calendar where you harmonise the northern and some southern hemisphere fixture schedules as much as possible so that you can have this kind of global calendar. I think it is difficult. You're right in the sense it's difficult to, you look at, like, for example, Ireland playing the PC Cup and the, you know, with Emerging Ireland, you have the Ireland Under 20 World Championship. So you have commitments for some of the younger players as well that have to be done, and you can develop some of the younger players within that. Mm-hmm. But yes, it is very difficult to experiment, and obviously there's a responsibility on trying to get good results. I think you can manage the two to a certain degree. I think within the course of a Six Nations Championship, there are going to be injuries, and it's about, you know, the players, you know, if from an Irish perspective, the players taking the opportunities if they're presented. And in that respect, it gives you greater depth and development. So, I mean, if you look at the Six Nations, no Peter O'Mahony, no Ian Henderson, no Tommy Bowe, but that's opportunities, and those players will be missed, but it's opportunities for three other players. And the key for Ireland going forward, progress-wise, is that players take the opportunity, and it doesn't matter what age they are, to a certain degree, as long as the players do take that opportunity, then Ireland can go forward and they can be successful.